ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Hello there, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today I'm speaking with paleoentomologist Dr. Günter Bechley, a senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Bechley served as curator for amber and fossil insects in the Department of Paleontology at the State Museum of Natural History in Stuttgart, Germany. He earned his PhD in geosciences from Eberhard Karls University in Tübingen. Bechley specializes in the fossil history and systematics of insects, the most diverse group of animals, and especially dragonflies. Günter, so glad to have you back on the show.
Hi, Andrew. Nice to chat again.
Well, today I would like to discuss with you two articles you wrote recently for our flagship news site, Evolution News, about an enigmatic Ediacaran organism called Namocalathus, which has been claimed to be an animal that preceded the Cambrian explosion, and thus, allegedly, establishes that it wasn't such an abrupt event after all. First, can you give us some background on what Namocalathus is all about?
Sure. So, Namocalathus is a small fossil, a calcitic fossil, and has been first found in the Ediacaran of Namibia. Ediacaran, that would be something like 550 to 540 million years ago. And it has meanwhile also been recorded from many other contemporaneous localities in Asia and in America. It belongs to the earliest known biomineralized organisms, that means organisms with a skeleton. And together with two other genera, Cludina and Namapoikia, it represents one of the few elements of the so-called Ediacaran small shelly fauna. And this is, by the way, only similar in name, but otherwise very different from the Lower Cambrian small shelly fauna, because it's often claimed that there is some continuity, but it's very different. So the Namocalathus fossils are about 50 millimeters in length. They are club-shaped. They have a stalk and a kind of head, which has a ring of openings, usually about six, and a wide opening at the apical end. And they were considered to be associated with microbial reefs. They occur in groups and aggregations, and they show some fossilized evidence of asexual reproduction by budding. And all this, of course, is only based on the skeleton evidence. We have no knowledge at all about the soft-bodied organisms. And this is why the affinities of Namocalathus were and still are mostly uncertain. It has been considered as a relative of sponges or cnidarians, or more rarely as a protist or even as a calcified alga. And just 5 years ago, there was a sensational new study by Tsuravlev et al. In 2015, and they claimed that Namocalathus was a bilaterian animal of lophophorate affinity. And unsurprisingly, this was, of course, celebrated by Darwinists, including the authors themselves, as evidence against the abruptness of the Cambrian explosion.
Huh. Okay, so you mentioned that Namocalathus has recently been identified as an animal of the group Lophophorata. Tell us, what are lophophorates?
Yeah, so that's certainly a relatively unfamiliar term. So the lophophorates are a group of marine invertebrate animals that include, for example, brachiopods. These animals are superficially similar to bivalves and mussels. And then there's an extinct group related to brachiopods. It's called hyalids. Then there are the still living phoronoids, that's horseshoe worms, and bryozoans, that is moss animals, also called ectoprocta. And all these animals are living in the sea, some even in freshwater. They are filter feeders or suspension feeders, and they do this with a so-called lophophore organ. And this lophophore organ is a U-shaped ring of ciliate tentacles surrounding the mouth opening. And these tentacles work as an upstream collecting device. The established fossil record, the earliest fossil record for all these groups, goes back to the Cambrian explosion, but not the Ediacaran. And that made the claim that Namocalathus is a representative of this group quite significant.
Okay. Well, skeptics, as you know, often say that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. What's the evidence for the attribution to low FOFO rates, and do you think it's good enough?
Not really. So the claim is exclusively based on two relatively dubious lines of evidence. So one is the so-called ultrastructure, the fine structure of the wall of the skeleton. And the authors claim that the pattern of this ultrastructure uniquely fits with the structure in low FOFO rate, brachiopods, and bryozoans. But there are two big problems with this claim. So the minor problem is simply poor sampling. So the authors did not look at a sufficient set of other biomineralized animals, including groups like the related extinct hyalids, the extinct cludinids, and the sclerostenophores, which is extinct group of comb jellies with a skeleton. But there's a much more important and absolutely fatal problem for the author's thesis, and that is bryozoans and brachiopods are not most closely related to each other, and scientific experts do not consider the skeletons of these two groups of organisms as homologous at all. They even consider the skeleton to be independently derived at least twice within bryozoans, and therefore the similarity in Namakalatus cannot be claimed to be a uniquely derived feature that suggests phylogenetic affinity. So that was the one line of evidence. The other line of evidence is an alleged bilateral way of budding, of asexual reproduction by bilateral branching. And this has been used as evidence for an underlying bilateral symmetry of the soft part of this organism, because the skeleton is not bilateral symmetrical, it's hexaradial symmetrical. So here the problem is one that the authors failed to establish, that bilateral budding only occurs in bilaterian animals and not in coelenterates. That is especially problematic because there's new evidence published by Malakoff in 2016 that suggests that radial symmetry of medusoid cnidarians is derived, and that cnidarians were originally bilaterally symmetric, like one of their recent groups, which is Antozoans. And also many comb jellies are more or less bilateral symmetric. So that is one problem. But again, there is a deeper problem. And this deeper problem is that the authors cherry-picked the evidence, and they just used some branch specimens which show a more or less bilateral pattern. But there are many other cases of smaller specimens not branching bilaterally from larger specimens, and the authors ignored these other specimens or ad hoc explained them away as being not cases of asexual budding, but they said these cases are just colonizing of sexually reproduced planktonic larval specimens that then accidentally settled on the abandoned skeletons of dead larger conspecific specimens. And this sounds very much contrived and highly unlikely, because if this would be the case, you should expect to find small Namakalatus also attached to, let's say, skeletons of Cludina or Namapoika, but there aren't any. So it would be strange that they recognize their own kind and just attach to other Namakalatus specimens. So these arguments show that it's not a question of pro or con Darwinism. It's simply poor science. And this is also why it's not just us Darwin critics who doubt the conclusions of Tsurovlev, but even other mainstream paleontologists and evolutionary biologists raise doubts for precisely the just mentioned reasons.
Interesting. Well, it sounds to me like, you know, a lot depends on, when it comes to the fossil record, the preconceived notions you bring into it, you know, what you get out of the evidence and how you interpret it all. If the evidence then for Namakalathus as an Ediacaran low FOFO rate animal is so weak, is there also conflicting evidence against such an attribution?
Yes, indeed there is. And it's one, the just mentioned hexaradial symmetry, which is totally foreign to bilaterian animals. And strangely, there is a well-known Cambrian organism called tulip organism with the scientific name Cyphosauctum. And Cyphosauctum has a hexaradial symmetry. It has a stalk. Sounds familiar. It has a cup with an apical opening and a ring of six lateral openings, very much like Namakalatus. It just had no skeleton, but it is considered to be closely related to this extinct comb jelly group called Clerostenophora, described by Cao et al. 2019. And they did have an organic skeleton, and even mineralization of the skeleton cannot be excluded, according to a work by written O.U. et al. 2015. So we have here a much better supported alternative relationship, which was endorsed in several more recent publications.
What is your personal opinion then about the affinity of Namakalathus, and does it refute the abruptness of the Cambrian explosion?
Certainly not. And in my view, Namakalathus simply currently remains to be one of those many problematic Ediacaran organisms that could be anything, including protists. But if you would press me, my personal bet would be on cnidarians or comb jellies because of this hexaradial symmetry, and especially comb jellies because of the similarity to the Cambrian organism Cyphosauctum. But whatever it is related to, it definitely does not refute the abruptness of the Cambrian explosion. And by the way, Namakalathus itself appeared abruptly about 548 million years ago without any precursors in the fossil record. And it disappeared likewise abruptly at the end of the Ediacaran 542 million years ago. And so generally, the claims that some dubious fossils of uncertain affinity from the Ediacaran could solve the problem of the Cambrian explosion, to me, is rather a sign of desperation on the side of Darwinists, who, of course, realized the severity of the problem and therefore try to force the data to produce some of the required ancestors.
Now, in your article series at evolutionnews.org, you've discussed most candidates for Ediacaran animals as alleged ancestors of the Cambrian phyla, including two large reviews on the mollusk-like Kimberella and all putative Precambrian sponges. Do any of them stand up to scrutiny, or are they more likely based on, like you're saying here, wishful thinking?
Yeah, so they do not stand up to scrutiny, and that's not just my opinion. I actually corresponded with some leading colleagues in the field, and they agreed with my conclusions. So not even the alleged Precambrian sponges stand up to scrutiny. And just recently, it was shown that one of the best candidates, which is this organism Namapoikia, that this is not a sponge, but a protist aggregate, which nicely confirms the conclusion of my article at Evolution News. There are only three plausible candidates for Precambrian animals. And these are Haotia, which is a jellyfish, and probably a jellyfish, and thus not a bilaterian animal, not a possible precursor for the bilaterian animal phyla of the Cambrian. Then there is Ilingia from the latest Ediacaran in China, which is a worm-like animal of uncertain affinity because its body plan is very much unlike anything else, dead or alive. And finally, Kimberella, which is, against many popular articles, not a mollusk, but rather kind of stem bilaterian, but still with very much uncertainty, as I have recently shown in this article series at Evolution News. So there are no Ediacaran ancestors for any of the 20-something bilaterian animal phyla and their distinct body plans that we find in the Cambrian explosion. And their complex body plan still appears suddenly out of nowhere, as if they were planted there. And this is, by the way, not a statement by Ken Ham or so, but by Richard Dawkins himself, which to me clearly suggests that there was rather an infusion of information than a slow, gradual, unguided process. And in my view, it's just this ruling materialist paradigm that has in the past decades, in a way, undercut and hijacked science and does not allow scientists to follow the evidence. In my opinion, that's a really deplorable state of modern science, that a metaphysical worldview dictates and limits the scientific hypothesis rather than the empirical evidence. That's actually why I found the intelligent design movement like a breeze of fresh air, even when I was not yet a theist. it's science as it really should be, free to follow the evidence wherever it leads, rather than being blinkered by an obsolete 19th century worldview of materialism.
Günther, I agree with you wholeheartedly there. It is a sad state when you cannot follow the evidence where it leads because you're somehow feeling committed to this previous assumption about life and about the universe. So it's folks like you that really unlock the shackles and let us consider things as they are, not as we want them to be, given any sort of paradigm. Well, thank you so much for unpacking this with us. I really enjoy your expertise. It's like going to school. Anytime I come and sit with you, it's just amazing to learn about these things. So thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, listeners, you can, like me, if you need a second look at some of this and reread some of Dr. Beckley's work to understand this fully, you can do that at evolutionnews.org. He's got a whole series on different fossils and why they don't refute the abruptness of the Cambrian explosion. To learn more about his work in general, you can visit his website, www.bechley.at. That's BECHLY.AT. And to listen to more interviews with Dr. Beckley and others in the intelligent design research community, you can hop on over to idthefuture.com or search for the show in your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget, if you enjoy the content on this podcast and want to help others find it, consider leaving a positive rating and review in your preferred platform. That'll help new listeners discover compelling scientific evidence for intelligent design that they can weigh against the claims of Darwinian evolutionary theory. We appreciate your support. For ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.